gentlemen, to another exciting, flippant and flamboyant episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously Fukushima-irradiated island-chained nation of New Zealand, where everybody has a part-time job as an energy saver light bulb, and my very special guest coming out live. Oh, wait, are you in the Naki? Kerry Campbell is my guest, I think.
Yes, I am.
Yeah. I've got some kind of affinity for the Naki, and just the mere fact that people refer to it as quote-unquote the Naki makes it awesome enough for me. And so let's get a wee bit of a backgrounder on you, Kerry. If you might explain to those who are unaware just a little bit about who you are and what it is you do.
Well, as you know, my name is Kerry Campbell. I'm a mother of eight. I live here in Taranaki. The journey I've been on for the last 4 years has been a journey of self-discovery. So that's what I do. I'm about rediscovering who I am and taking the steps necessary to be able to show to government that I am this person. I stand in my own truth. And I will challenge them on every step that they take. You know, 4 years ago I started following the corruption, which I had no idea about. You know, people talk about how corrupt the government is and whatnot, but you never, unless you actually go looking, you think everyone's a bit crazy and probably just needs to get a life. But The sad truth about it is that I went looking one day and I actually found that there was some truth in the corruption that we were under. It was like an invisible cage being placed over us that nobody even knew or was aware that we, although we feel we're roaming free, we're in actual fact not. We're in an invisible prison that we, myself and my team, strive every day to basically lift off the people here in New Zealand, in Australia. Our biggest goal is to be able to share it with the world so that the rest of the world can either follow in the same footsteps or take on their own journey in removing their shackles. So that's just a little bit about us. My background, I have a background in tertiary education, so I launched the first computer gym in Wellington. And I also used to work for the New Zealand Road Transport. So I was the administration manager at their head office in Wellington there. So that's just a little bit about me there, Vinnie.
Okay. Well, so being a mother of eight, you've got an affinity for responsibility.
Yes, I do actually. And, you know, prior to having children, I was a bit of a party girl. But as I started having children, I realised that I've got an obligation and a responsibility to these little children, and that's what I was going to do. I was going to do my best to provide them the best tools and just the best learning experiences, I suppose. And when I discovered the corruption that we were under and the lies that were being fed to us, I've made it my mission to put a system into place so that my children and anyone else that who feels the same as I do, they can escape that and they can know with 100% that their children are protected. But at the end of the day, if we don't do anything, then it's our children that have to walk with this. They have to carry it. And if we're not giving them the tools, then there's no way, there's absolutely no way they will ever overcome it. The system was designed so that not one person would ever uncover the lies and the corruption that we're currently under. So, and it's a very intricate, it's a well-designed system of lies to be able to convince people that the world that we live in is actually the world that we live in. But the Matrix tells it really, really well, so I'd recommend people go back and rewatch that, revisit the Matrix to get a good understanding of the invisible prison that we are living in.
Yeah, it's a great analogy, metaphor, whatever the particular word is. But
I also understand that you managed to withdraw $15 million from a bank.
Yeah,
and that's so what, real. That's no fairy tale or digital illusion.
No, what I did was I came across the One People's Public Trust back in June, and through using their technologies, I was actually able to make the deposit. So we had been made aware in December 2012 that the government had been foreclosed upon, and we all know that foreclosure means bankruptcy. So which is quite funny to say, but that's another story. So we had been made aware that they were foreclosed. So what I did was I took the liberty to write to them and inform them that I knew that they were closed. And I wrote to them on a number of occasions saying, you know, please, I have these legitimate questions that I need answering. And once again, they failed to respond. So in the end, I sent them a letter and I said, okay, look, it is my understanding that you have been foreclosed, and this is my intention. So I wrote to them and I let them know that I was going to take a closed check account. Now, back in 2010, this is when I first discovered the banks. The bank's corruption and how they were duping people, getting people to sign up with mortgages, and then in actual fact monetizing that signature, which is what gave birth to the creation of the funds. So when I discovered that, I took the necessary steps to be able to secure my straw man, and then I placed the lien on the National Bank back in 2010. Now I've had an old checkbook with the National Bank. So what I did was, come this year, I registered that closed check account on the securities website, and I registered them as negotiable instruments, and I also registered my declaration of being and my declaration of value, which was where the money was drawn from or underwritten from, and then I wrote to the government. And I said, look, this is what I intend to do. I'm going to I've registered my negotiable instruments to my closed checking account. Now, people need to remember it wasn't a public account that I used that was to a closed check account. And if you read Mary Croft's book, she explains the difference to you really, really well. So upon notifying everyone in government about what I was going to do, I decided to go out and educate local businesses around here in Taranaki, just to let them know how they would be able to increase their sales pipeline, increase their revenue pipeline through offering the alternative money system in their business. Now, how I visualised it was just a simple FPOS machine. So we're looking at putting together this FPOS system where we can go in, stick it into local businesses, and it'll just sit right next door to the old FPOS machine. And people that are registering with us with the alternative money system will be able to, will get access to a swipe card, and they'll be able to go down into these businesses that hold these machines, and they'll be able to make their purchases via the FPOS machine. And it's a great way for businesses to be able to increase their sales pipeline and their revenue pipeline. So what we did was we notified the banks, and I decided, okay, well, in order to do this and set up the centre that we want to make here available to the people of Taranaki, we need funds to do so. So I decided to draw down $15 million of my own value, and that's exactly what I did. So I wrote to the bank, and I explained to them what I was going to do, and I explained what the negotiable instrument was all about. I also offered them a 10% discount, and obviously I would take $13.5 million, and TSB Bank would take $1.5 million. Upon offering them that, I also let them know that my negotiable instrument or my signature was not to be used or traded on the stock exchange or on any trading platforms. And then I made the deposit. So I went into the bank and I first and foremost, I asked for the contact details for the CEO, because I really would have preferred to have done it in person. But obviously the bank don't give out executive CEO details. So that was okay. So I said to them, okay, well, I'm going to have to charge you with the duty of delivering this to them, delivering this to your CEO. And that's exactly what we did. We delivered the documents to Kevin Murphy, Prior to delivering to him, we'd actually, if you remember, we'd actually notified the government prior to even making the deposit. So we notified the government to let them know what we were going to do, just so that they would be able to go down the channels or and of notification process. So we were sort of making it available to the government so that they could probably ring up the bank and say, hey, look, here's a heads up. You've got a girl that's coming to make your deposit. And then, yeah, so we went about doing the deposit. Now, that day I went in, I handed over the documents and everything in an envelope, and then I handed my the checkbook and my deposit book over to the counter, and I said to her, listen, I also need to make this deposit. And obviously when she looked at the check, she got a bit nervous because it was for $15 million. And, yeah, so she happily took it. She filled out the deposit slip. And she stamped my book, and then she took my negotiable instrument and she took it over to the computer and she started entering that money into the system. Now, what we do know for a fact is how banks create money out of thin air. And what we did was a prime example of exactly how banks create money out of thin air. So they take a document, usually it's called a mortgage agreement, and they basically use your signature. Now, that signature gets monetized. So what happens is they deposit that mortgage agreement as cash. It's in actual fact a promissory note. So that gets deposited into your account as cash. So the same way I took my closed check account down, that's exactly the same way those funds that for your mortgage are created. And then once she did the deposit and she'd stamped my book, I said thank you, and you know, I asked them, I said, oh, look, could you just please not be so excited, because I do have to get out of the bank and make it home safely. And they understood that. And so after that, I went out to the money machine and I went and got a balance. And I don't know if you've actually seen the documents, Vinny, but I've actually leaked some documents online to show the deposit slip and the balance from the ATM machine. And as you'll see, it's in the ledger fund, so which means that money in actual fact has been entered into the system. And it was a beautiful way to be able to show the people of New Zealand just how their mortgage agreement, the funds from their mortgage agreement are born.
I'd like to read you out something here, because Michael Laws actually got in on this. Did you see this thread?
No.
All right, this is great. This is the article out of openyoureyes.org.nz. Kerry Campbell of Harwood in New Zealand unlawfully arrested and detained after exposing massive banking fraud. I'm sure you're familiar with that piece. It was written about you. And the commenter, I think, is Marnie. I'm not sure if you know him. He says, make this go viral. Anyone else want $15 million deposited into their own bank account? This lady exposed the fraudulent banking and monetary system, the system we all use every day. And Michael Laws, I was quite surprised to see him even commenting on something on Facebook, let alone something like this. Seriously, Kerry Campbell is mad. This is tinfoil hat stuff. And I reply saying, ad hominem, pointing the argument at the person's character instead of any of the evidence brought up. Common propaganda tactic. He says, no, seriously, she is mad. Raving loony, listen to her. That's some serious psychological delusion she suffers from. And she has 8 kids too. Stay out of jail. Look after the bubs. And I go, really? What fact is mad? And what is your rebuttal? Calling someone mad is not an argument. It's schoolyard name calling. And he goes, no, it's a psychological assessment. Who believes in actions are not those of a sane person, and she exhibits classical delusional symptoms of someone suffering from mental illness. And she doesn't employ facts. She is following an internet conspiracy. And then I said, then I said to him, can you name what one of her claims is and why it's not true and the product of madness? No reply. So I go again. Conspiracy. Two or more people coming together to cause harm on another person or persons without them knowing about it. A conspiracy theorist. Is a person who believes that powerful people who have a lot of influence exercise their power to maintain or grow their influence. A coincidence theorist is a person who believes everything on earth happens by sheer coincidence. No such thing as lies. No such thing as backroom deals. And here's a quote. Woodward and Bernstein are conspiracy theorists. I am not a crook. Richard Milhouse Nixon, later exposed by Woodward and Bernstein as being part of a conspiracy and also a crook. And no reply from Michael Laws.
No. That's the problem with Michael Laws is we all know he's trained to basically debunk anybody. And he gets paid very, very well to be, to open up a can of worms, to lead a conversation in the totally wrong direction.
And then just bugger off whenever he gets asked a decent question that he can't answer,
right?
Because he's just so much of a bloody mainstream media attack dog piece of trash. All right, Kerry, we're coming to break now. And we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with the lovely Kerry Campbell in just a few minutes. Don't you go anywhere, folks.
We're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday, and Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV.
Welcome back.
You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. My very special guest is the obviously mad Kerry Campbell. Yeah. Well, the thing is, if you have a few laughs and you can talk reasonably and you come up with facts, evidence, clear accounts of things that have happened, and somebody calls you nuts, I think that person's actually nuts. Have you ever heard of projection? You know, where you call the other person what you are. So let's read over Michael Laws. Let's read over the Michael Laws things again. Seriously, Michael Laws is mad. He's a tinfoil hat wearer. No, seriously, he is mad. A raving loony. Listen to him. It's some serious psychological delusions he suffers from. It suddenly makes sense. It's the exact same thing that I came up with the fluoride nutters. When I say fluoride nutters, I mean people who actually think that toxic waste is good for you. You know, they just call you what they are. It's quite hilarious, but also very frustrating.
I have a Facebook page about fluoride. It's called the National Register, the Case Against Fluoride. So, that's on Facebook. And I support all those who want to get the F out of the water.
Yeah. Hey, I think that's actually a really good campaign slogan that we should start up with,
Yeah.
Hamilton. Keep the F out of the water.
It's a beautiful slogan.
Yeah. Incidentally, it's a really bad idea to swim in the Waikato River, so it works both ways. Yes.
I agree. Funny, because I'm from the Waikato, right? So I was born in Hamilton and raised in a little town called Ngarawahia until I was seven years of age. And you could happily swim in that river quite easily back then. Now that was only so many that wasn't too many years ago. So I'm just shocked at the 20 years later you're not able to swim in that anymore.
I do think that this is one of the crazy things because what was it? I had hitched a ride down to the Temple of the Four Winds, the Kingitanga down there in Te Kawiri. And as we were cruising through the Waikato, the elders in the car were telling me stories about the rivers and everything. And apparently when they raised cattle, they made sure that at all times they stayed a good 50 metres back from the water, from the riverbank. And at night they'd take them a good 150 metres away from the riverbank. And the river was pristine. It was beautiful. I mean, in the 50s, for example, you could see the bottom of the Waikato River running through the middle of Hamilton.
Yes, right?
Now it's just some. It's almost like a freaking effluent outlet.
Yeah, I can imagine it is with Fonterra on the back there. then you've got Echo right across the road. It does look like some sort of effluent site. It looks more like a swamp than a river. So it just goes to show, you know, over the last 20 or so years, how much things have changed, you know. I understand that we're moving into a world of technology and modern technology, but, I mean, surely there's a better way, because is all that technology worth sacrificing our rivers for? I mean, our rivers are an important part to us, especially our Māori people. We've really got to ask ourselves, is it really worth, you know, losing some of our natural resources for? Because the Waikato River is, you're right, it's used by date.
It's like in Dune, you know, water is life. And so we destroyed it in order to save a farming industry. I think we're kind of getting a little off topic here, but I'll say one more thing about it. As you referenced, you know, the Māori people and their ties to the land and so on and so forth. I was once present at a meeting where a Māori representative who fronts for a trust that has been given, I think, a little over 100 rivers and lakes to take care of, and every single one of those rivers and lakes that this Māori trust has been given to take care of is currently in pristine condition. By contrast, every single lake and river that is currently under government custodian title is a polluted wasteland. I say that we need a nationwide thing to just give all of the rivers and lakes into Māori custodial title. I mean, that may sound like really radical, but at the end of the day, Māori seem to know how to make sure that the land and the waters don't get frickin' polluted.
That's right. That's right.
Look, if you're going to give the country to a prime minister who doesn't know how to run a country, why not, you know, Have you ever heard the phrase the best man for the job, or woman in your case? You know?
Yeah. Yes, I have.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that freaking simple, as far from where I'm sitting.
It is that simple. Māori have demonstrated it for years, long before colonization even came here. So I mean, it only makes sense to me as well. But anyway, that's another subject for another show, I think.
Oh,
and I could talk on that.
Yeah. And we have the babies in the background making an awful lot of noise. It's one of the things that comes with the territory, I guess.
Yeah. Yep, I'm real. Yeah. I'm a real person. I have children. They're pretty cool too, by the way.
Oh, choice.
Love to have them.
And so what actually happened? I mean, how did this whole banking thing really start for you? I mean, was there a first sort of experience that made you start questioning, or did you start questioning and then you started to have the experiences?
I heard about it. Actually, I was watching the Vinnie Eastwood show. I heard about it, and I watched a few things on YouTube about it, and I thought, you know, surely not. And then I actually took the time to stop and ask the question, yeah, why do they have the authority to make money? How come they do hold a lot of the resources? Like, I mean, as tangata whenua, our people here hold really nothing, because it's all been taken off them. But how is it that these people have come in and they hold all the authority? And how come they get to tell me what to do? I mean, because in my belief, I believe that the only person I answer to is God. So how is it that these people, through these laws, have some sort of authority over me? So when I started asking those sorts of questions, I went looking And I went looking for answers, and then I started finding that, maybe they don't have that sort of authority over me. Maybe it's just a presumed authority. And if I rebut it, then we'll see what happens. And that's exactly what happened. I rebutted their authority one day. So I was being threatened with arrest. And I just said, well, and he says, do you understand that? I'm going to arrest you. Do you understand that? And I said, absolutely not. I don't stand under that at all. He says, that's your law. My law is common law. You're subjected to that. So no, I don't stand under that. And then to look at the reaction on his face, it told me a thousand things. So he was shocked. He was stunned. He didn't know what to say other than, oh, look, I'm not in the mood for this cultural bullshit. And when he said that to me, I thought, hello, hang on, something's not right here. He didn't arrest me. Now, we all know that police officers are trained to wrap you up. They're trained to
lie.
They use tactics to basically put you in a dishonor position. And they're well trained and well versed to be able to do that. So, and generally any other time when they say they're going to arrest you, I've seen it, they arrest. And there is no ifs or buts about it. But one simple little statement, and that was, no, I don't stand under that. And it spun him off his feet. And I noticed it, I seen it. And I thought, we're onto something here. He's just backed down. And all I said was, no, I don't stand under that. So there's got to be some sort of truth in what I've been researching over the last, I think it was about a year back then. So I went looking for more information. And that's when I found, how banks are monetizing signatures, mortgage agreements are actually promissory notes. The governments only have presumed authority. And then I also found out that in 1933 that they declared bankruptcy, so there was no money, which also meant that the government had a fiduciary responsibility to be able to pay everyone's debts. So when you start finding out those sorts of things, you go looking for the information that backs it up, and that's all I did. I just went looking for the information to back it all up. And when I'd found all the information that solidified it for me, there was no going back after that. It really is about jumping down a rabbit hole, and the only way to get out of the rabbit hole is to keep going. You can't climb back out of it. You've just got to keep going till the end. And that's when I fell down the rabbit hole.
it's quite a rip-roaring ride, and I think it's almost a tragic existence. Don't you think?
Yeah, it is.
You figure out that there's some evil scumbaggery going down. You figure out the scam, and you start to scam the scammers, and then they just start scamming your bank with their scumbaggery again. You know?
Yeah, that's right.
It's I'm not doing anything that you can't do, all right? Yeah. Just, I've broken no freaking laws, have I?
Right. That's right. People need to look up the Bills of Exchange Act, and then they'll see what I've done is within the construct of their law anyway. So I didn't break any laws. And, I mean, you've got to ask yourself, if what I did was just a simple fraud charge, then why on earth did they abduct me from the courthouse? Why did they spend so much time trying to hide me? So I was abducted from the Hawera courthouse by... three officers and three black ops. Well, I call them black ops because I know they weren't officers. I know they were private police. Actually, we'll call them authorized personnel is what they're actually called. So I was abducted.
Wait, did you say authoritarian personnel, or was that just me hearing things?
Authorized personnel.
Okay. If you say so.
So I was abducted out of there, the courthouse on the Tuesday. Now, six people participated in my abduction from the Hawera courthouse. That is why my people, that were my supporters, that were only there to support me at court, it ended up turning into a bit of a what we call a protest, because they had abducted me from the courthouse and nobody knew where I was, where I'd gone, what they had done with me. they locked down that entire police station. So Hawera Police Station was closed that day. They closed it. Once I was kidnapped, they took me back to the Hawera Police Station and they held me there at the back of the police station and locked it down. They didn't allow anyone in or anyone out. And the only ones that were going out were obviously their staff. But that entire police station stopped working that day. They all stopped working, and what they did was the court clerks and everybody, the prosecutors, they all colluded with each other, and they were all telling my family and friends who came to support me at court that day, who were expecting me to appear, oh, look, she's pleaded guilty and we've shipped her off to Arahata, and which was an absolute lie, because we all know that a judge cannot take a guilty plea without a lawyer present. So a lot of people don't even realise that I didn't even make it to court that day, that I was abducted from the courthouse before I even made it up to appear. And then they took me back to Hawera Police Station. They held me captive there, shut down the police station, and they all gathered around the back of the building and around the cell, and they all had a court hearing without a lawyer present in the Hawera Police Station. So, and now they recorded it. Now, I was made, like, the officer, Officer Ivan Smith came in and he says to me, now, listen, I want you to listen up real good before you say or do anything. He says, you know, I want you to think about what you're going to say, and I want to think about what you're going to do, because, you know, this is going to be your deciding factor. And I sort of looked and I says, okay, all right then, yep. Okay, I accept that, because I'm really scared right now, because A, I've just been abducted from the courthouse. B, I've just been given a whore of a hiding. I've been choked, I've been strangled, I've been ragdolled, I've had my hair pulled, I've been thrown, I was thrown into the cell and I smacked my face on the toilet bowl. So I was extremely scared. I was actually half expecting nighttime to come, and I was half expecting them to put me in a van somewhere, take me out the back and shoot me. That's how scared I was. So, and you know, you see the article in the paper, there's an article and they're putting me in the car and I am screaming. I'm screaming like there's nobody's business. Now, in that article, they said that I was charged. But that photo there that they showed with that article is actually the photo of them abducting me from the courthouse. Okay, so that's why I had that frightened, absolutely petrified look on my face, because I was being abducted right there and then. And then they tried to use that photo and said, oh, yep, she pleaded guilty, she was charged, blah, blah, blah. But that's not the truth at all. The actual truth of it was I was abducted. I was shipped around the country from Tuesday to Thursday, and I was...
Hold on, Kerry. We're coming to break now, and we'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, Kerry Campbell from Taranaki. Don't you go anywhere, folks. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. Next week, it's going to be daylight savings. Oh, yeah, I think I might actually take a week off because I've got a lot of videos and stuff to catch up on, fluoride meetings, Dr. Paul Connett's visit back in March. I still haven't finished that video, a couple of other products and advertisements that we need to get recorded for the network and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I think I'm probably going to have to take next week off. And then when we come back, it'll come back at the new time, Tuesday through Saturday, for those in New Zealand, 11 a.m. Till 1 p.m. and it'll run like that for a month until November the 4th when the U.S. time zone clicks over, and then it'll be back to midday till 2 p.m. for the duration of the summer. And it's going to be nice because I do like to stay up late and I do like to sleep in. Did I just appear very lazy there? I think I did. Okay. My very special guest is Kerry Campbell. And while we were over the break, you were talking about when you were in the cells after they'd abducted you. And let me explain something like this to people, okay? I've been arrested before, but I was arrested because of a warrant. I was charged. And even that by itself was pretty scary. It's probably the most horrific, most traumatic thing I've ever gone through in my entire life. Now, I've never been abducted by anybody without just cause. And so I can imagine it would probably be 2, 3, 4, 5 times as traumatic as it was. And it was so traumatic to me that it nearly destroyed me. So this is the kind of stress and pressure and so on and so forth that the establishment uses against you if you expose their frickin' scam. Now, you told me that while you were in their possession, like one of their possessions,
yeah,
there were three men who tried to dislocate your shoulder.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. Three men on one arm, which I can imagine that they... Part of the order was to just like break something and teach her a lesson. And so three men on one, they're physically trying to snap my shoulder. And as I kept screaming to them and saying, please stop, stop, you're going to break it, you're going to break it, stop it. You know, they didn't relent. But I actually have a screw in my arm anyway, because I've had a dislocated shoulder and I've had surgery on it, so, which is probably why they struggled to snap it, because it's a pretty solid rod in there. So failing that, they attempted to break my wrist, and then in failing that, they attempted to snap fingers. But like I was saying to you, it was evident that the support and all the energy that I was being sent from right across the world. Now, I mean, the entire, you know, right across the globe. It was obviously wrapping me up like a protective blanket, because three men on one arm, and I'm not a very big person. I'm only a tiny person. But for three men to fail in trying to dislocate my shoulder, it was unbelievable. But I mean, like I say to people, if what I did was a simple fraud case, if I committed fraud, then why did they go to such hassle in A, abducting me from the courthouse, B, shipping me around the entire country? So I was shipped all over the place, and they never left me anywhere longer than a day or a night. So I was shipped from police station to police station. Now, my team were following me. They were using their resources, and they were tracking me down. And so every word that they got, yep, she's in Whanganui police station, they would shoot over to Whanganui. Whanganui would be like, oh, no, she's not here. Don't know what you're talking about. And then so they'd pull their resources in again. They'd say, oh, no, look, they've taken her to Palmerston North. So my team would chase me to Palmerston North, get to Palmerston North, and they've gone and picked me up and moved me again. So this was happening for a period of 2 days. So from Tuesday to Thursday, I was shipped around the countryside, and the Howard police were hiding me. And they were pulling in all their resources of their authorised personnel to make sure. I was actually only allowed to be with authorised personnel. I was not allowed to be around anyone. I was to be in supervised care, which meant under the radar, under a camera, being listened to, being watched, being heard, all of it. Now they had the hearing at the station. So like I said to you, they shut down after I was abducted, they finally got rid of my supporters and my family that were at the court. And they were protesting me at this stage because they wanted to know where I was, what did they do to me, and, you know, was I alive? Was I even alive? Once they were able to basically bullshit everyone and tell everyone, oh, yeah, no.
Look, by the way, this is FCC-regulated radio, so you have to say BS.
Oh, sorry.
It matters not. Continue.
Too late. So once they managed to swindle everyone, everyone left and they came back to my house and they had a bit of a hooey here. But while they were doing that, the entire court, so the court clerk, the registrar, sorry, the security guard, that I already have on notice too, by the way, and the entire Hawera police station stopped working that day, and they all came to the Hawera police station and stood outside my cell. They all stood outside my cell to intimidate me, to make sure that what I said was what they wanted to hear. So anyway, the judge walks in and he says, right, what are you going to offer me that will convince me that you're not going to do this again, to let you go? And I said, listen, I am so scared right about now. I'm scared for my life. I want to return home to my children. That I will just do whatever you want me to do. He says, no, I don't want you to do it because you want, you know, I want you to. I want you to do it because you want it. Now, what are you going to offer me? And I said to him, I will do whatever you want me to do. I will say and do whatever you want. If you want me to plead guilty. I will plead guilty. I will take the rap. I'll do whatever it takes, please. I just want to go home to my children. I just want to be a mum again. And I'm very sorry that I've even done this, because I now understand that you guys are capable. You are highly dangerous. So I'm just going to do whatever you want me to do. Okay. And he's like, okay, all right, then. Well, I accept that. And so one of the officers says, oh, okay, so are we going to take a guilty plea? And he says, no, we're not going to take a guilty plea because we've got no lawyer present. I can't take a guilty plea when we've got no lawyer present. And he says, so what we'll do, send her back.
Hold on. So now they're worried about doing things legally.
Yeah, that's right. So in that case, they says, okay, well, we'll send her to New Plymouth and we'll hold her there. And he says, then we'll hold you there and we'll see you back here again on Friday. I says, yep, okay, whatever. If that's what you want, if that's what gets me returned home safely to my children, I will do whatever you want. And I'm very sorry that, you know, I've caused all of this grief for you. But you know, I do want to let you know that I did inform the government and I do have a claim of right. And I said, and you're charging me with using a document for pecuniary advantage. I says, under the Crimes Act, I do have a claim of right. So therefore this charge does not apply to me. And he says, no, you forget all about that. And I said, but the government's been foreclosed. They've been foreclosed. They're in a state of bankruptcy. And I says, and not only that, they're all acting and nobody knows it. And he says, no, you forget all of that. Okay. I don't want to hear any more of that. And we'll talk on Friday. I says, oh, okay, all right. So I just realized that, yeah, don't go any further with that talk, Kerry, because it's not going to get you out. So what I did was I played the game with them. I did whatever they wanted. I was polite. I was always polite to their staff. Now, even when they put me in Arohata, so I was shipped to Arohata for the night as well, and I was returned back to New Plymouth on the Thursday afternoon. So we actually had a court hearing. I was actually charged and convicted on the Thursday, not the Tuesday. So the paper told everyone that I was charged on the Tuesday, but I was in actual fact charged on the Thursday. Because from Tuesday to Thursday.
You mean the paper didn't get its reporting right? You don't say.
Yeah. That's exactly what I'm saying. Now we all know that we've come to know that whole thing, they colluded with each other. Now, although he said Friday, they were bringing me back Friday to New Plymouth, what that was just a deterrent to be able to distract everyone and to give everyone the wrong information so that no one would show up at my court hearing. So they told everyone it was Friday, where in actual fact we had court after court had closed. So after 5 o'clock, they took me into the courthouse and we had a closed court session.
This is like so cloak and dagger, bro. Oh my God.
I know. They covered their tracks really, really well. But what they don't realize is by doing so, by acting in that corrupt manner, they were only exposing themselves even further. So we had a closed court hearing on the Thursday. So I wasn't actually charged and convicted until the Thursday, despite what the papers said, Taranaki Daily News, naughty, naughty. Charged on the Thursday. And now when I was charged, when I was going up to court, it was not standing.
Hold on, Kerry. We'll continue this after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, don't you go anywhere. We'll be back in less than 5 minutes.